Or if it was a sunny day, but a bit cool, you know, like a bit cool in the shade, they'd be following the sun. Following the sun around on the flats, manoeuvring, and wherever the sun was, they'd go and sit. Sometimes you'd have a group sitting here, a group sitting there. But the main group, the main group of fellas that were here all the time, usually propped here. Yeah. This part here.
So you could always come here and there'd be someone here.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sometimes a fella, you know, if they didn't quite make it home, they'd find them in the bushes, you know. Or they'd wake up in the bushes and sleep. So, yeah, you'd come here, someone would be down, you know, first thing in the morning. Yeah.
People sleep here?
Oh, it was pretty rare. People usually had a place where they could stay, or an empty house, you know, or squats, yeah, as they call them today, but empty house. And or they could have had a room somewhere, you know, cheap room, you know, boarding room, you know, so much a week. And, yeah, but every now and then, you know, fellas might sleep here just for the night, you know. I couldn't make it home too legless, you know.
Yeah. So when did you first come here?
It was back in the 70s, back in the early 70s when I'd left, my foster family, I was with, yeah.
And did you know, you're pretty aware that you had family here?
Yeah, well, that was the color. I got a letter from, written to school, the school I was going to, Lilydale High School, and, apparently my family, well, one sister anyway, knew where I was all the time, you know, but they wouldn't get in touch with us.
Yeah.
They sent me somewhere where they couldn't get in touch with me, you know, at all. So, so that was the catalyst for me leaving my foster parents. Sister finding out where I was and telling me about, you know, mum passing away and all that, and I had brothers and sisters, you know, and so that's the reason I came here. Looking for family, I thought I was just confused, just wandering around Melbourne homeless, and until I found out about Fitzroy. I was hanging around down the city, you know, down the city of Melbourne, before I ran into this Aboriginal guy and said, "Listen, you've been up Fitzroy lately." I said, "Where's Fitzroy?" And he looked at me like I was stupid. He said, "That's where we all hang out, brother. You know, all the black fellas." So this is when I first came here, walking down Gurdja Street from Nicholson Street, and outside the Champion Hotel was my cousin, Chris Austin, Mr. Personality. And he, I ran to my sister Alma for the first time outside the old Champion Hotel, yeah, just across the road from here.
Did you recognise her?
No, she knew, he thought I was my brother, Chris, my cousin. He said, "Oh, and the way you walk and the way you held yourself, I thought you were someone else." I said, I asked him, "Who do you think I was?" He said, "Johnny Roach." I looked at him, I said, "Well, that's my big brother." And he ran inside and brought this woman out. And he said, to her, "You know who this is," referring to me. "You know who this is?" And Alma looked at me, my sister, and she started to cry. I said, "That's my baby. That's my baby brother, Archie." Yeah. She knew after all these years that I wasn't quite sure who she was, but she knew me. It's amazing, eh? After all those years. Yeah.
How old were you?
I was only about 15, 16, you know. Just a young bloke when I left, and hit the streets. And
you were here from then on? You never went back to your foster family?
No, I never went back. I kind of wish I did, you know, but I did manage to get to both my foster parents' funerals, the Coxes, Dad Cox and Mum Cox, because, through all the nonsense and all the rigmarole of what took place, they were still loving people and beautiful people that helped me come through a pretty bad time with my second foster parents I was with. So they helped me through that with love. So at least I managed to make their funerals and say goodbye to them, but I wish I had seen them before then, you know?
Yeah. So you saw your sister and then that was it? You were in Fitzroy?
Yep.
And what were some of your experiences? I mean, what were your kind of, experiences at that time?
Oh, well, you know, I'd already been drinking, started drinking. So, coming here, I suppose, drinking a lot, but we used to sit here and it was a communal thing, a community, to me it was a community, and it was seen as part of the community as well. I don't know so much about now, but yeah, it was that was good. We could walk down the street and people would say hello, shop owners and people we knew, because we knew them. So a lot of things, just sitting down. I learned a lot about my family from these old parkies, and so things like that. It wasn't just drinking as people thought. It wasn't just that. It was the dialogue. Was beautiful. It was, what we talked about, the conversations we had were great, and just meeting people. People would come, people would drop by, or people would come and stay for maybe a week or so, and then take off, And
were there a lot of people in your situation?
Yeah, I was probably, when I came in at 17, I was probably one of the youngest blokes that was hanging out, and all the fellows were 20 or. In the 40s and even older sometimes, and so it just became a thing. It just became a way of life,
Were you getting much support at that time? Were parkies? I mean, you had some access. You seemed to have more engagement with the wider community.
Yeah. Well, when the health service first opened down here, close to the ward, Smith Street. That was more like a community drop-in centre. Yeah, you had some of us parkies, we'd be a bit under the weather and a bit drunk or something, and we'd go into the health service and we could even just sit down in one of the chairs and have a sleep and nobody would pay us any mind, that was just a normal thing to do. And sometimes we could go in there and have a shower and Auntie Sissy or Auntie Edna Brown, they'd be cleaning up and had something to eat. They might cook you up something to eat, just a bit of food, toast and some something or other. And so, but that's the sort of only support you could get. There was the chemist here, Dr. Riley here. He was a good man, good friend to the community. You could go in there, prescriptions. He was a JP, and he'd sign letters that need, if you had his signature on a JP signature, we were pretty right. It was authorised, And so people like that, they looked out for us, So yeah, but as far as any support, no, it was just out of the goodness of people's hearts and what they wanted to do, yeah.
So it was really the community was, you had each other, that was your community.
Yeah, exactly.
Were there people, were you around when Jock set up the gym and stuff?
Yeah, Jock set up the gym, not where the gym is now, well across the road from there, on top of this, sort of in, what's that street there, George Street I think, they've got on top of this old sort of workshop or garage type thing. And I was there. We used to drive around with him, collecting all the stuff, all secondhand stuff from boxing gyms. And mates that Jock knew, old fellas that Jock knew that were running gyms, and he'd go and acquire secondhand stuff and good gear, but secondhand equipment from them to set up the first gym, And that's how we did. We carted it upstairs and set it up the first gym with nothing, my brother, nothing. And that's how I started. Now look at it. It's worth over $1 million in assets. It's great. I was here when old Jock, Herb, Cousin Jock, yeah.
So you were here when people like Skull came in and stuff? Did you meet?
Skull Rose?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Scully Rose, yeah. 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 Yeah, they were, it's like they come later on, you know. I was a young bloke then when I first come here. And when they come, these other blokes come in later, they were the young blokes then, younger blokes.
Like
little bit younger than me, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like Tedja, yeah, Scully, and all of them lads, yeah.
So it was a really strong community then?
Oh, yeah, yeah, very strong. We were called, yeah, we called each other staunch, you know. It was staunch, it's like a ship, you know, in a storm. You know, staunch, you know. And so, yeah, we'd always... Yeah, it was strong. We'd never watch each other's back. We'd always watch each other's back. If someone flaked out, you know, someone would sit with him. You know, others, they'd say, oh, yeah, I'll watch him till he wakes up. You know, and the others would wander off somewhere and go score another drink or something, or go to the pub, have a few beers, play some pool, listen to the jukebox.
People still talk about that now, like sharing being such an important part of it. You know?
It was. They made sure that you were right. They wouldn't leave you here sleeping on your own because for fear someone might come and give you a kicking or something, or worse, you know. And but that was the sort of things we thought about, you know, and just made sure that everybody was safe. And anybody else, even some of our sisters and aunties that were drinking around, you know, or come in for a night out at the pub, we made sure whether they were right. If they got into trouble, one of the first places they came to was the parkies. Ah, these fellas giving us a hard time.
So you're kind of like security.
As well, yeah. Sure.
That's what they talk about still now.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how important was this to you? I mean, your own, obviously you went on and, you know, got a career in music and seem to with your first album documented a lot of this.
Yeah.
You know, people talk about the song Charcoal Lane. Mm. I mean, how important was it to express that, and what were you kind of trying to say?
Yeah, when I first came here, I was too smart for my own good. You know, I was too clever. I was too. It was part of my upbringing, you know, being taken away and education. You know, I had to go to speech therapy and things like that, and. So I had to come back here to be re-educated, if you know what I mean. And they re-educated me. They gave me a proper education here. And I'm glad of that, you know. I had to be brought down a peg or two, but that's all right. Some people need that, you know. Yeah. And plus also that, you know, it was that side by side we walk along. Side by side, you know. Nobody be sort of in front of each other or whatever, you know. Nobody be leading, you know. There was no sort of boss. There was fellas that, you know, we knew, you know, who could, you know, who, you know, I suppose was the older or had more of a say in the group. But that was all right. That was understood. It was usually the best pug, you know, and that's, you know, and that's the way it was. But that's okay, you know. It was good education, good schooling, and I try to say it was. This is what we had, you know. This is, you know, we had this this friendship, this camaraderie. Places like Charcoal Lane weren't just places. We drank, and I always try to say to people, it was more than drinking. People just noticed the drinking of, in particular, Aboriginal people in parks or anything. They're missing the whole point altogether of what they're there for. I don't know where it's changed along the way, you know, in Gertrude Street, you know, like we sat here and, you know. Like I said, nobody minded. We had friends like Dr. Riley and others, you know, shop owners, traders that... but I suppose that was the, you know, back in the 70s, it was the, I don't know, it's people's... included everybody in the community, I suppose, or saw everybody as part of the community, rather than exempt from the community or outsiders. So I don't know where that changed, because parkies spend money in the community. They, you know, albeit there might be grog there, but they've got to buy smokes, they buy some food, fish and chip shop, hamburgers, whatever, you know, so they're spreading around whatever money they really get too as well. if they're not doing any damage, I know it's hard. We need something, you know. We need a place, and I don't know why we never thought about it years ago, you know, of getting some sort of centre or drop-in centre or something going for fellas. But then again, there's this thing about, you know, having a drink, you know, and sitting around talking, you know, and, you know, the grog's like, we saw it back now, that was like fire, you know. That was like the fire, the flag, and that was like the fire. We all sitting around it, you know, talking, communicating, feeling like normal, feeling this is what we should be doing. But the grog got the better of somewhere along the line, but still had that strong connection with each other, you know. And that's it. We've got to maintain that bond, and we can't lose that unity that we've had for so long, you know. And things like this, trying to do away with that the gathering of people, which is a strength in unity, you know. The parkies, you know, some fellas we found out that we lied in each other, you know, and that was all right. But they need, you know, we need a place where, you know, where they can just go and just be. That's all. I can't.
Do you think that's sort of happening all around Australia? It's a similar process.
Yeah, I was up in Townsville recently, and they, you know, like they did away with the old hostel up there for the drones. They call them drones. The parkies up there, drones. I don't know why. And but there was used to be a place, a hostel, where you stay right across from the park where they used to gather and have, where they used to sit. But that's gone now. They knocked that down because they put up. I said, what have they put up there? Sort of some apartments and that, you know. I said, what? It goes from one extreme to the other, you know? It's ridiculous. I said, make up your mind. But where, in the meantime, it's pushed these people, the homeless and the parkies, further out, you know, and they're out near, most of them are camped out near the cemetery in Townsville. You know, Happy Valley, they call it. But yeah, then people are really. Today I've noticed that they're a lot harder on the street people and the parkies than they were in the past. As far as people not really wanting them there in wherever that area or business or whatever. Business and trade and commerce.
Yeah.
They can't, I don't know. Lobie's Lane, we used to drink down Lobie's Lane. Mr. Lobie said if we bought grog there, we could drink in his lane. He paid money for that. So we used to keep it safe. He said, no, this is private property. And we used to drink down the back of his shop where we bought the grog. And he said, please come there. He came back. I said, no, I pay for this part here. They're allowed to drink here if they buy a drink in my place. Only we couldn't go there with, you know, he said, where did you buy that? Here, Mr. Lobie. Oh, good.
How were the police in those days?
Oh, no, they were pretty. They weren't good, you know, they weren't really good. They'd done some pretty rough things. You know, we were just drinking and then they did some. We'd get locked up sometimes, you know, we'd pull up in the street. You know, back then they would, you know, I don't know, they were hard heads, you know, like everybody. We were hard heads too. We were tough nosed, they were tough nosed, and we wouldn't give an inch, they wouldn't give an inch. And that's the way it was. People say that's the way it was. I don't know what else to say. It's probably a little different now. I don't know, but they give us a hard time, but we give them a hard time too. Yeah.
So you'd see them here, but also in the pubs they come into.
The pubs, and if you were too drunk, they'd tell you to go home. And everyone's like the champion. I said, nah, you had enough. Get. So we just go down to the builders. And then they'd be down there going, didn't we tell you to go? I said, nah, that was my cousin. We all look alike to you, fellas. No, not that. Trying to be funny. Nah, get home. Yeah. Things like that. And if they catch you a third time, that was it. You're gone. Right. If you didn't go home or wherever it was, you slept.
Did you go into jail? Were a lot of brothers going and getting out of jail at that time?
Yeah, it was this thing, fellas, you know, you'd go in for a time and come out. You know, it was... Yeah. Well, you're just usually locked up for drunk and then just thrown out at about 3 o'clock in the morning or something, a ridiculous hour of the morning. Yeah. I said, can't you throw us out? Pub opens. But nah, so. And fellas, going to jail for things, but not like some of the stuff they're going for jail in now, you know. It was mainly just all grog-related stuff, you know. Breaking in a shop, you know, drunk, you know. He wasn't going to steal anything, he just, going to have a sleep.
And, you know, so, people do a little bit of time in Pentridge and stuff. I don't know, you're talking about that. But, But listen, about the issue now of how important this place is in terms of, like, the ongoing sort of identity and history for urban Aboriginal people. The people coming out of the... Everyone who has gathered here over the years, I mean, what does Fitzroy mean to you?
It's very important. Historically, this is an important place. It's, I found my family here, but the thing was everybody knew my family. Families knew families. Everybody knew everybody. And, that was important. And these places, this strip here, this little Gertrude Street here, this little street here, it was such, some days even you'd be walking down there, like if you're going somewhere, you probably wouldn't get there till an hour later just walking down Gertrude Street, talking to people, stopping talking to people, elders, young fellows, older fellows, middle-aged, whatever, just talking to community, it was beautiful, bro, beautiful, and it's very important. And it's slowly disappearing, it's slowly gone. I see it now, I look around and all I see is Ghostbusters here. It's slowly going that, but it's important that people know that this is where people came to find family, Members of the Stolen Gen came here, to find their families and found their families, And not just that, found their identity, Find out, I'm Aboriginal, I'm black, I'm dark-skinned, lips... flat nose. I look Aboriginal, but it wasn't until I come here until I started to feel Aboriginal, Because they had this sense of community, had this sense of, looking after, if you had nothing, They say, oh, well, when you get on your feet, you can do me a favour, And things like that. But it's important historically that people came here, found their families. I did, my brothers and sisters, not just me, a lot of others. Young blokes here, I even sat here myself, and young blokes came in. I looked at them, I said, hey, who are you? I said, you look like so and so. And chances are that they'd be that person. They'd belong to the family that I'd mentioned, So it was important that, that this is where people came. If they were looking for their family back in those days, they'd come to Fitzroy. They'd come to Fitzroy because chances are somebody'd know who you were. And what I mean, like who you were, the funny thing about that was they rattle off your whole family, right back to your grandfather and that, And I say, that's you. I said, yeah. Yeah. And that's it. See, they'd place you in your family, because they'd know. So that's you. And then it's important. Many people in this country have that, And I think that makes us, stronger for it. That makes us, that's a positive thing that people should remember before Link Up. Before anything else, all these organisations that help people find their way back home, there was here, Fitzroy, Gertrude Street, the park. And that's how we found, and people got to know that. And got to know that's where they found out, not just that, but, found out a bit, probably, I don't know, how to behave a little bit, because there were gentlemen back in those days. Parkers were gentlemen, that's true. So it's important historically that people know that the pubs where people met, the health service, just in the street, in the park, people sitting down just having conversations, you know. You know, fellas would be talking about their uncle. One fella would be talking about his uncle, and be going, who? I said, my uncle. That's your uncle? That's my uncle. So things like that. It's rich. Those stories are rich. It's so rich, all the stories, that if I could gather all those stories up and just put them in one box or something, that'd be priceless. That'd be so rich, you know. And that's the importance of this place, you know. It goes beyond the drinking, beyond everything else, and it became a place where we could gather, a place where, you know, where we could gather and feel safe because we were all here. And and historically we found family.
Do you think it was...
And became a meeting place.
Yeah.
Gathering, meeting. Just meeting every day, you know, so we could be together. It was and that was a thing. That was a thing that we looked for each day. Each other. Each day we looked for each other.
Did it sort of give you the strength to sort of move on with your life as well, do you think, being here?
Yeah.
Did that help?
Yeah, it did. You know, like, I got pretty cooked physically from drinking as well. That helped, but you sit back and, you know, you take it all in, everything, you know, that people have talked to you about and you've listened to. And it helps you, no? It helps you. It's where I found. It's where I grew. Where I learned that as a man, an Aboriginal man, you are responsible for your family, and if you don't have a family, you are responsible for your community. And as I learned that here in the park, believe it or not, with parkies. And it helped me go on. Now I'm a patron of a men's group that believes in that, that has that very same principle, that Aboriginal men responsible for their families and their community. I mean, and that's what I learned it here. So that helped me a lot. Yeah.